French socialism. But if you go anywhere in the world, no matter what their philosophy is, they're all doing the same thing. They're all eating with a gun, putting it in their belly and having sex. And every now and again having a good stew. No good. So, try and study that. That means that really there's an energy or force which controls everything in this planet. I mean, if you actually studied it as someone standing up in the sky, isn't it amazing that every corner of the planet are all doing the same thing? Exactly. There's not one single difference in the Pygmies in Borneo jungle and President Bush in the White House. There's not one single difference. The only thing is different environment. Some are doing a little hut on the Amazon and some are doing a little big White House in America. So the same thing is going on exactly the morning, noon, and night. From the moment you're born to the moment you die. You are a programmed machine that is programmed by nature. Prakriti, Kriyamanani, Munakana, Vibhavasha, Ahankara, Vinyasa, Kartaha, Iti Manyata. Study that verse. You are a machine which is programmed completely by Prakriti to do exactly what nature wants you to do. And you don't have a single choice. Not one single choice of anything you do. You are a victim of energy. You, all of you, are coming from Asian background, but you are completely westernized by Western dogmatism, by Western education, by Western mentality. Why? Because you're programmed. You're programmed from the moment you're born. And your parents thought that it was a very good idea that you become like them because they're programmed. You see, if you ask your father, Dad, what exactly did you gain out of that? Put it in life. And then say to him, why did you think that I had to gain the same things you did? What was so special about what you gained? And you program me to get in the same thing. Right? And then you have to say the same thing to your kids. What is it you're going to give your kids? A new car? A new computer game? Two televisions in their bedroom? A pair of roller skates to go down the Asdis and fire on the top? What are you going to give them? If you're going to have that responsibility, give them. You better start thinking what you're going to do. Because if you don't, then you're cheating. You've cheated your children just like you've been cheated. But the Bhagavatam says, don't bring children into this world if you can't give them God. Because you're just bringing in another animal into this animal world. And who needs more animals? Plenty of it is. So if we simply produce animals, then what is the use? 99% of the people that die on this planet are useless. Are completely wasted life. Totally wasted. Not one crumb of gain in 80 years on the planet. So go into the nursing homes. If you've got spare time, go visiting the nursing homes and see how much they've gained. These are people who've been hanging around there for 80 years, doing the yoga. See what they've gained. Do you find much? What will you find? Dribbling all over their sofas, watching some stupid yoga on television, or some nurse trying to pump them for some drugs to get them to bed. And that is reality. The illusion is that you all think, because I'm young, I'll stay young forever and I'll have a great life. And at the end of it, I'll go back to heaven and have a good time there. That's the way people think. But that's the way we all dream. We're all dreamers.
living in cuckoo land. We don't want to face reality because we don't like reality. It spoils, just like when you're sleeping, your mom used to wake you up and say, "Mom, I was having a great dream. What did you do that for? Leave me alone. I was having a wonderful dream. Now I've got to go out and face the cold day." So people like to be in this snug little bed, dreaming about this and that, feeling like the cozy. So that's how we like it. We don't want to do anything about our life. We're just dreaming and hoping that things can only get better, 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 better. And the reality is, they don't get better. You know why they don't get better? Because it's impossible to get better. Material energy is not created to get better. It starts good. It has a peak. It deteriorates and it's destroyed. All energy on this planet, all energy in the universe, from the little insect to the planets themselves, everything starts with a big resonant pad. It stays for some time. It peaks at a certain time. Then it deteriorates, deteriorates, and then gradually it's obliterated. Everything. There is nothing in this creation, even science accepts that, that would withstand the forces of time. But therefore, if everything ends in destruction, better to find out what happens after destruction. That's the important time. Because ultimately, your final experience is destruction. So therefore, you've got to be ready for the next thing. And that's the important thing. So in other words, life itself is really a preparation for the next round. Make the most of it. Otherwise, there's a way of genius. It may not come again, but maybe even in the end. One devotee went to an astrologer in India called Bhrigu. Bhrigu himself has every single chart on Figley, on Lily Palmer. Every chart. You go there, the guy can come out and tell you who you are, where you were born, what your name is. He'll tell you everything about your life. Bhrigu wrote it down on a leaf. You know that? And I've met four people who've gone there, and he pulls the leaf out. Sometimes it takes some days to find it. Once he pulls it out, he tells them everything about it. He even tells you who's sitting in the room when you leave the room. So this devotee, he said to him, he said, when you were 22, you met your guru, which is exactly when he met Prabhupada. He said, that guru is an incredibly important person. He is a brahmana of the highest level. He said, that meeting with that great Vaishnava Brahmana, he said, is the single most important thing that happened to you since you came into the material world. There's an astrologer who is being looking at someone's chart. The chart doesn't come from him, it comes from Bhrigu. Bhrigu is one of the great sages, the son of Brahmana. And on that chart he had written that. That that meeting with Srila Prabhupada is the single most important thing that's happened to you since you came into the material world. Think about that. And then you know what he said? Simply by the instructions from that great Brahmana, you in this lifetime can go back to God. By that. Simply by his instructions, simply by the words coming out of his mouth, you can finish your connection with material energy. That's what he told him in the chart. Now, that applies to everyone. That's meeting with Srila Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Krishna is the single most important thing that's probably happened to you for the last 20 trillion years. Think of that in time. Let's just put a time on 20 trillion years. It's a long time, isn't it? Can you imagine 200 years? 2,000 years? 200,000? 2 million? Think of 22 years. So if you miss this opportunity, Prabhupada said on the Vyasa side, he said, if you don't take this opportunity that you've been given by Krishna, he said, then you are the greatest gospel. As the Prabhupada said, he told him, he said, if you don't take this opportunity that's been given, he said, there is no greater gospel. So that's our pleasure. Okay, finish. Any questions? The body is skin, bone, earth, water, fire. It goes back into the earth. It goes, all the elements of your body, we merge with all the elements that come. You don't take your physical body, do you? So, Krishna says in the Gita, as the ear carries aroma, the subtle body carries the concept of life. From one life to another. Subtle body.
Because
you're in a hellish planet now. You think you're in a nice planet? Huh? You think you're in a nice planet? You don't even know what a nice planet is. The cockroach thinks living in the sewage is cruel. No, you can't preach to a cockroach and move away. You try and preach to the rats, not to live in the dust. They think they're going to worry. They say, come on, it's great. Well, we get all our fun. I got my wife, my family. We get all free food. And we love it. So, you think this planet is good, and you don't want to go to a worse one. You're living in hell. But you can go to more hell, because there's more hell. There's another, what do you call it, hundreds and thousands of planets further down, which are more hellish than this. You're in the middle. So, that happens, yeah. But don't think you have to wait until you die. You can go through hell here, yeah, don't worry. There's plenty of hell here, too. Because the middle means sometimes there's hellish conditions, sometimes it's a little bit of heaven. Sometimes you can go to places here and it's like that. You know, I don't think hell could be much worse than that. And what some people have gone through in this life. Hell is there and you'll pay a visit. Well, I hope you don't. But you've been to hell before. Many times. You can't remember it. So, keep going, keep coming, keep going.
The last of what you just spoke about now, which means it's blessing with the one I've just discussed, about death, about up to now, but there's some new thing to the earth, and then there'll be a happy spot, and then it's the wilderness comes over, and suddenly, well, I'm earnest as well, everybody is trying to die out. And suddenly, you know, a bubble sort of metal splashing in the air and whatever I'm saying around me. It's just the wilderness. And I just want some reflection for that. I hit the bear just by the sun in the back. So, it's that. And then when it comes to the real concrete decision making or taking on board that you said comes over a few years of reality or death. How, what's the single most important opportunity you've ever said that you hear to stop the decision making, holding on to it, focused by it, as well as, you know, the happiness really that I could do this time generally, just for a fact that you've been found a sober part. As opposed to just constantly trying to turn the machine to make everyone happy. So I know it's not there in this world,
I think it's very hard to talk in a general sense because each individual person has his own journey. And that journey has many, many different experiences which are going to direct them in certain ways. I think that you have to look at your own individual self and analyze what is the single biggest obstacle. I mean, there's no question. The biggest obstacle is lack of seriousness. Because generally, in Kali Yuga, Manga Samanga, we're not serious, we're lazy. As when it comes to spiritual life, people are just not serious. And I think that lack of seriousness is, you know, very prominent in this age. And without it, there's no real depth of search. That's why in Vedic culture it was very serious. If you study Vedic culture, the Brahmins, training, the austerities, the tapasyas, they were very serious. The civilization took it very serious, took spiritual life very serious. Now we don't. Because we don't need it. We don't really need it. You don't need God. You don't need religion. You don't need God. So I think it's a question of prioritizing. Each individual has to fly his own airplane. And we might be all airplanes flying in the sky. When we get in trouble, we're the only one. You can do something about it because everyone else is flying their own. So each individual has to prioritize how serious he wants to get when it comes to spiritual life. And I think that becoming serious, you know, is based on sincerity. And unfortunately, sincerity is a very scarce commodity. So, instead of what obstacle, I think is what is the motivation to make you sincere. And that's why, particularly, it's emphasized by Rupa Goswami, the different things that will bring about deep sincerity. And of course, they're all based on sadhana bhakti. Without sadhana, there's nothing. Nothing. Spiritual life without sadhana, without discipline, is a waste of time. It's a total waste of time. And that's not just something made up, it's a scientific fact given by Rupa Goswami. If you don't have any sadhana, you can't control the mind. If you don't control the mind, spiritual life is a waste of time. But most people don't want to control the mind, so they don't have any spiritual life. Simple as that. Even in our Hare Krishna movement, ISKCON. Over the years I've watched, 60-70% don't make it. I mean, I remember when I joined in 1970, there was no one around, maybe one, two. But it was full up, the temple was full up. And I've watched over the years, full up temples, all the time. And then I look around, I say, I don't remember any of these guys 5 years ago. And that's reality. I mean, we can say, because people are wearing dhotis and shaven heads, they were here for the, they're going to be here all their life. It's a dream world. They're not. It's because they're not serious. If you leave Krishna consciousness, because you're not serious. If you don't become serious, you can't be in the boat, unfortunately. And it's the same if you want to be a high court judge, if you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a lawyer, if you want to be a car mechanic, you have to be serious. And people are serious about those things, because if they don't, they can't get a living. They can't get a job, they can't get a career. And the parents will get angry. But if you don't do anything spiritual, nobody's going to get angry. People say, oh, you're normal again. Thank God for that.
It's just one question on my mind. First of all, I'm born in a Vaishnava family.
Yeah.
I've been, for the last 6 years, my grandma's growing up, my grandparents are growing up. Now I'm 19, I realise what spiritual life sort of is about.
But I noticed that since my plan has brought me into Krishna consciousness and, you know, believing in it and being required to, I found that I have been a little successful in life, but at the same time, when I'm outside in the world, that has something to do with the mind that comes in. I tend to forget how I've become successful. I'm still young, I can't say I'm successful, but how I've been brought forward and, you know, being good in love, I tend to forget what's done to bring me forward. What do you think I should do?
Well, the point is, Maya doesn't come in. We're in Maya 24 hours a day. The question is that how much we want to escape Maya. And if we want to escape Maya, we need to do certain things. Because she's not just going to go away. You know, it's like people when they get disease. It just doesn't go away. So you have to get serious about doing something. So that doing something is how much you implement instructions from higher authority. So you have to take instructions. Because if you want to escape Maya, you should go to someone who's already escaped. Just like if you want to study mathematics, it's better to go to a mathematician, not a butcher. So if you want to study any science, you go to someone who's practiced it, studied it, and can help you, give you instructions. And that is what the first principle of Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, that just try to learn the truth by approaching this spiritual master. Inquire submissively. Submissive means to submit. And offer service to him. Self-realized soul can impart knowledge on you, but he has seen the truth. You haven't. You haven't seen the truth. But he has. And if you want the truth, he can give it. If you don't want it, don't bother him. He won't bother you, and you won't bother him. But the question of search for truth, most people don't want the truth. You know? Well, who wants to be told that the things that they enjoy the most are actually not giving them any pleasure? They don't want. Because they believe in those things. So if you start telling them that, they say, I just don't want to hear it. So therefore, most people don't really want the truth. Because the truth reveals things to you that are scary about yourself. And most people like to live in their own little dream world, and that's where they stay, because yaya mantra bhajan te. Krishna says, as they come to me, I come to them. But the onus is on you to come to Krishna. So you have to be determined. Big battle. You have to start. And then once you start, then it becomes easier and easier. It's like, you know, an airline pilot. He didn't just walk in and become an airline pilot. But now he's an airline pilot, it's like falling off a lot. He gets in a big jumbo, flies it, you know, 10,000 kilometers. It's like falling off a lot. It's probably as big boring. But for you, if you go in a 747 with 400 passengers, you'd be scared stiff. You know, what do you do now? Things start taking off. So it's all a question of familiarizing yourself with a new type of... The more you familiarize yourself with it, the more you become expert. So if you want to escape Maya, you have to take shelter of Krishna. You have to come to Krishna. It's not easy. If it was easy, then history would show a lot of people who can see God. But I don't think you'll find many people who can see God. That means it's not easy.
I've seen so many people they worship in some of the gym course. They worship the Lord God. And
Yeah, the worship of Krishna is the most important. And why in the first place are the sacrifices being still meant for the demigods and not just for Krishna? Why did anybody bother Krishna in the first place? And ultimately,
because Veda Vyas compiled the Vedas, even Narada Muni discussed this with him. He compiled the Vedas for the whole of society. Now, if you talk about the whole of society, you're talking about the different varnas and different ashrams. Means he divided society into different categories because those categories are scientific. Chapto varna, Krishna says in Gita, I have scientifically created four divisions: the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, the vaisyas, and the sudras. So therefore, the Vedas are, if you like, the complete picture. So some of the Vedas deal with brahmanas, some of the Vedas deal with kshatriyas, some of the Vedas are particularly for vaisyas, and some of the Vedas are particularly for sudras. Although sudras are not generally, if you like, Vedically inclined. But what he did was he divided and subdivided over many, many years the different divisions of the Vedas. The emphasis on what we call karma conduct is very important, because karma conduct was a section of the Vedas which people could become elevated by strictly following a section of the Vedas which required sacrifice. Now, most people, it's the human psychology, and it's been there from the beginning of time. Most people are after gain, and they look at religion for gain. So therefore, the idea of religion not having any material gain is practically impossible for people to follow. So therefore, what he did was, he made the gain there in a certain section. And the idea, as these people became more and more convinced about the, if you like, the fruits of the karma conduct, then the other divisions of the Vedas would bring them onto a higher level. So how he laid it all out was very, very scientific, so that all different sections of society would get elevated. If you only emphasized Krishna and only emphasized one particular aspect of surrender to Krishna, it is known fact that you will find that you will only get a very small section of people interested. Because it's a very high state. The worship of Krishna is a liberated condition. It has nothing to do with material condition. It's a very, very high state and very rare. Krishna says himself, Bhavanam Jamanamaka, in many births, someone even comes to the platform of understanding. So, for most people, it's not possible to make such a quick decision. But the idea of the Vedas was that the absolute truth was emphasized, but for those who couldn't take to such a level. Even in the Gita, if you look, Krishna says, if you can't do this, do this. If you can't do that, do that. In other words, you can't just isolate one thing and leave everyone go to hell. Because, you know, just like you can say today in the world, there's Islam, there's Hindu, there's Muslim, Christians, whatever, whatever. But you'll find that anything good going on in the world is because of their philosophy. I mean, there's a lot of bad aspects, but there's a lot of, for instance, crime, morality, divorce, all of these things are criticized in all of those religions. Whether the people follow them or not, at least there's some idea that God is not happy with what they do. So if you said, okay, forget all those other religions, only follow Krishna, then a lot of those people wouldn't. And religion always has to be a personal choice. So Vyas had a very difficult problem because he had to make religion attractive And at the same time, he had to, if you like, bring in Krishna in such a way that the ultimate goal of Veda was Krishna. But that's why Narada said to him, okay, you've compiled the Vedas and it's very, very good, but now you explain it in their essence. And that's why he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in Kali Yuga, the Bhagavatam is the only scripture needed, because it's the complete essence of the Vedas. All of those other sections, Karma Kanda and everything else, were properly applied in the different yugas. They're not applicable in Kali Yuga. Because in Kali Yuga, everyone is born Sudra. So they wouldn't understand the Karma Kanda. If you go around and study Hindu study, their worship of demigods, it's hodgepodge. It's rubbish. They don't worship, nobody worships demigods. They have some statues and they blow a bit of incense in front of their face and ask them for everything under the sun. So therefore, those things are not even recommended in this age. So religion in this age is not even existing. That's why the holy name, the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita are the torchlights for this age. And they're the only thing that can save society properly. But all of this other thing, you can say, why did they emphasize it? But it doesn't matter anyway, because no one follows it. I mean, what is a Hindu? You could write books filled with room, what is a Hindu? Because this one worships that one, this thing. One time I went to someone's house and with everything on his altar, including Indira Gandhi, the Pope. And I said to him, I said, well, which one do you actually worship? He said, I worship all of them. And he literally had pictures of everything on his altar. I said, what do you mean all of them? He said, I'm not taking any chances. he said, one of them must be right. Or at least he had Krishna. He said, one of them must be right. So, that's Hinduism. People are scared that they got the wrong one. You know, they're worshipping Durga, they're thinking, well, hang on a minute, is she really going to give me his neck? Maybe this one's okay. Sticking Ganesh makes sure. Bring in this one. And then they hear about another one. Well, bring that in as well. It's only a picture. Okay, we have to come to an end.
One more question. Kenzi was mentioning, like, how we get bewildered. We are bewildered. I am bewildered.
I am bewildered. A very important emphasis on, we always have this thing, I get in Maya. You don't get in Maya. You are in Maya.
But Kenzi also mentioned that after an enlivening sort of class or discussion like this, for a short time, the consciousness is elevated, but very, very quickly.
That's why you have to study every day, chant every day. Listen to Prabhupada's tapes every day. Not just every day, every hour. Not just every hour, every minute. Not just every minute, every second. If you really want to get serious. But if you can't do that, try just doing 23 and a half hours.
And
leave half an hour for rest.
One other question as well. It says in the Nectar of Instruction that the first quality that is helpful for advancing in spiritual life is Utsaha. How do we, which means enthusiasm, so how do we actually get this enthusiasm? How do we maintain it, especially when all the responsibilities are going to start coming?
You only get things from taste. You see, the human consciousness is coming from the soul. The soul is essential, and it is a completely nectar-seeking entity. You have no other interest except nectar. Every single person, from the tiny microscopic germ to Lord Brahma, is after nectar. Nectar means unlimited pleasure. We are pleasure-seeking entities, and we only work on pleasure, nothing else. So that's why the things in this world which are the most pleasurable, they're the things you give the most time to. And eating, sex, all these things. They're very pleasurable, so people give them the most emphasis. If you go at the magazine rack and look at the magazine, you will find 90% of them are about sex. Just in different variations. And a few books on gardening. So the point is that what is the emphasis is because it's the most pleasure. A person works out all day, but at night they like to have sex. That's what gives them their boost for the next day. So similarly, you need a boost. And that pleasure you get from sex is not even the equivalent of trying to hold a candle to the sun, of the pleasure you get from Krishna. No, it is experience, but it's a question of getting it. Like any other pleasure, you have to work hard. Now there's what we call strayas and prayas, immediate pleasure and ultimate pleasure. And immediate pleasure is what you get now, that's animism. And you'll never get away from that. That's there now. When you scratch your leg, you feel really, right? You don't have to go to Bhagavatam class to scratch your leg. You understand? So that's called immediate pleasure. Your skin itches, scratch it, you feel, oh, that's good. Right? When you eat food, you get immediate pleasure. You don't need anyone to come and give you the philosophy of the Vedas and the fourth Vana and ashrams to enjoy food. If it's good cooking, it's what you want to eat, fills your belly, you feel great. And you'll never get away from that. Because those are immediate pleasures and you get them. The question is there other pleasure which is higher than those things? That's the question. That's the $64,000 question. And that question will only be answered when you experience it. No other way. All of the philosophy in the world doesn't mean a crumb unless you have an experience. Doesn't mean anything. What's the use in being a Hare Krishna if you don't have any pleasure? Devotees are devotees because they get great pleasure out of it. But that type of pleasure, for most people, is totally... I mean, if I said to someone, if they said to me, what is the most nectaring thing you could do? And I said to them, is to go and sit in a room for 2 months, reading and chanting. You know? And they said, well, wouldn't it be better to go to Hawaii and lie in the beach? See what I mean? But is it true that sitting in a room for 2 months reading and chanting is more pleasure than going around the world on airplanes, going to Hawaii, doing this thing that? The fact is it is. It's much more pleasure. It's ecstasy. And to prove it, the Goswamis spent 50, 60 years doing it. And they were ecstatic. So ecstatic that even the ruler of India would come there incognito to get some of the nectar that they had. If you read some of the stories from that time, they're pretty far out. And one story where Akbar, I think it was Akbar, or one of his colonels, he saw Rupa Goswami sitting. Rupa Goswami was actually a minister, and a very rich man, extremely rich. And he lived in aristocratic. He went to India, he lived on the trees in Vrindavan, wearing a piece of cloth. So this big man, and I mean big, this guy was a multi-millionaire, Gentle Rupa Goswami. And he said, he felt, because he's a big millionaire, and Rupa Goswami is a Baba, he said that, isn't there anything I can do for you? And Rupa Goswami was a little bit, he said, do what? So he gave the kind of idea, well, I could build you this, I could do this, I could do that. He picked up the dust of Kesi Ghat and he showed it to him. And the jewels he showed him were not even in his treasury of the King Akbar. He said, this is the dust of Vrindavan. Do you think I need anything you have? See? But if you go to Vrindavan, you see a few hogs and a few rats. And so you immediately think, I'd rather go to Hawaii. Came to the wrong place. That's because Krishna keeps the cover. You won't see what Rupa Goswami saw. You won't understand Rupa Goswami. You won't understand these great devotees, what they were getting up to. But study Lord Chaitanya. 18 years, all he did was sing and dance. But his ecstasies are recorded. And those ecstasies are not achievable, even by Lord Shiva or the great demigods. Because he demonstrated the result of spiritual life. And all he asked us to do is in 8 prayers. You follow those 8 prayers, which are called Shastakam, you will be on the same level as the Goswamis. Because they are spiritual gems. And the only ones he wrote down. So therefore, if you want it, it's there. If you don't want it, it's not there. And that's why the material energy there is there to test you. So she keeps dazzling things in front of your eyes. And that's why if you look at people's bodies, and the girls have got nice curves and nice faces and nice jangling jewelry, but inside it's all pus and mucus, bile, stool, urine, veins, garbage. Because that's the little dangle. Keeps us all going. Keeps us all enthusiastic. So in reality, a person would say, well, I've been following my wife for 50 years. Yeah, but what she's made of. Spiritual life is Chintana, Satchidananda Vigraha. And that's what we want, because that's real. So that's what we have to chase after. Now, unfortunately, chasing after that may take us many lifetimes. And we should start somewhere. Okay, let's finish here, because it's after.
Shri Bhagavanath Prabhu ki
Jai.
Shri Prabhupada ki
Jai.
Thank you.